Morning. Thank you for joining us. This is Denver South, and we're having a discussion of our workforce of the future. I'm Chris Shepard, VP of Economic Development for Denver South, and I'll be your host for today's meeting. For those of you new to our partnership meetings, Denver South is both the community surrounding the I-25 corridor south of Denver, and we're the organization, the Denver South Economic Development Partnership, that convenes public and private stakeholders to drive the vision of our shared community. Joining me from Denver South this morning will be Becky Nelson, who will handle the questions after our speakers go. And then Scott Jackson and Alex Kowski are behind the scenes, making sure our program goes without a hitch. Before we dive in, I'll take a minute to go through a few technicalities though. For today's program, only our presenters and hosts will be on camera and they'll be unmuted. But we do want to encourage your questions. During our presentations, please click the Q&A button and post your questions along with your name so Becky can pull them up during the last part of our program. Also, our speakers have graciously agreed to share their presentations and we'll post them on our website in a few days along with a recording of the program. With that out of the way, we'll get started. While the COVID pandemic has impacted Denver South's employment numbers in significant ways, our existing and future companies continue to grow, and they will continue to require a skilled workforce to be successful. Over the past 6 months, we've reached out to a significant number of large employers in the area who have shared with us that they are still trying to find employees. In fact, interviews that we completed just the past 2 weeks have underscored the need for software developers and engineers across our industries. So Scott, if you'll move to the next slide. This graph, which was provided by the Arapahoe Douglas Workforce Center, and it's updated frequently, gives a stark view of the labor shortages being experienced right now. It's the difference between the point in, on the top, the job seekers are in red. So it's the difference between the point in time number of job seekers available through the workforce system and unique active job postings above in gray. And it's in the last 30 days by occupation family. So you can see there's a lot of people out of work and a lot of companies looking for workers. It was this graph, in fact, that started a conversation between Denver South, Arapahoe Douglas Workforce Center, and the Colorado Technology Association. We were really blown away to see that there's such a great need for employees, while at the same time, there are so many people laid off and looking for jobs. Now, maybe they're maybe not prepared for those jobs, but there is something that we can do. So it's our intent and hope that there are connections we can make to match up the supply and demand in Denver South. While this is a specific example of how we can address workforce challenges, our speakers will expand on that idea by showing us current workforce demographics. They'll provide insights on trends for the new future of work, and they'll discuss some potential strategies we should consider to get Denver South back to work. I'll introduce Catherine Keegan and Renice Walker at this point, and then I'll let them take it from here. Scott, next slide. Catherine Keegan began her career in Boston with Catholic Charities, providing resettlement services to newly arrived refugees. This work led to her to pursue a Master's of Science in Social Work at the University of Texas at Austin, where she focused her studies on community and administrative leadership. Since then, Catherine has managed statewide AmeriCorps, VISTA, and state programs, workforce readiness and employment services in Texas, and career coaching professional development programs in Colorado and Indiana. In August of 2019, so she's been there about a year, she joined the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment as the director of the Office of the Future of Work, leading the state's efforts to raise awareness about the impact of the future of work and identify solutions to create a skilled and resilient workforce. Bernice Walker leads the execution of industry-led collaboration and strategy for the Colorado Workforce Development Council office. In her role, she enjoys working with a committed team of consultants to engage and support forward-thinking businesses to innovate best practices that meet business objectives while contributing to the well-being of their communities. Bernice serves as the staff point of contact for the Sector Steering Committee, Industry Intermediaries Consortium, and the BEL Commission. With over a decade of experience in managing social change initiatives, Renice believes strongly that addressing large-scale social challenges requires a willingness to break down silos and collaborate across traditional boundaries. With that, I'll hand it over to Catherine to run their presentation.
Thanks so much, Chris. I'm just going to share my screen. And does it show up okay before I start on my spiel? All right, perfect. Well, thank you all so much for being here this morning. I'm so excited to join you and to share some information about what the future of work trends we were looking at were and how they have been impacted by the pandemic. So just briefly, I wanted to talk about what the Office of the Future of Work is. It's a relatively new office that was established through executive order from Governor Polis in September of last year. And as we embarked on this journey towards the future of work, we wanted to understand a few key areas. One is, how do we modernize worker protections and benefits? Another is, how do we prepare target populations for the future of work, recognizing that even when our economy was booming in Colorado, that not everyone was experiencing that growth and that opportunity? And then ultimately, how do we prepare individuals, employers, and communities to be future ready and to thrive in the future of work so that everyone can have meaningful and sustainable employment? So that's the office in a very big nutshell, but I want to spend the bulk of my time talking to you today about some of those trends that we are seeing in the future of work. And to do that, I think it's important to begin by defining what the future of work means, because I think my office and the topic of the future of work is probably one of the most buzzwordy, overused terms. And so I want to make sure we're all operating off the same definition as I go through this presentation. So for us at the Department of Labor and Employment, we're really thinking about the impact of a variety of forces on the work we do and how we do it. Namely, we're thinking about the impact of globalization, market shifts, demographic shifts in our state, as well as technological advances. So when we think about the future of work, it's not one thing, it's a combination of these factors that have been at work for a long time and continue to shape the work we do and how we do it. So I'll start with globalization and market forces. As we think about the future of work, we are seeing the impact of trends that have been at work for years and years and years, since the 80s. So this graph is showing how our supply chains have extended over the course of the last 30, 40 years, and we've seen that impact felt differently by different populations. While it's created a ton of opportunity and a ton of economic growth, it's also put pressure on certain individuals in certain industries, namely in our manufacturing, customer support functions, and other sectors like that. And I name those industries because you'll see a trend as I go throughout my presentation. And as we talk about these forces, that there are certain populations and industries that have continued to sort of bear the brunt of some of these challenges. In particular, we notice a trend in terms of wage inequality and challenges due to globalization based on educational attainment. So while those with a bachelor degree or advanced degree they've experienced increased wages, we've seen since 1979 a decrease in wages for those that do not have that credential. And while a conclusion that could be drawn by some from this is like, oh great, we just need to get everyone a bachelor's degree, I think I'm sort of preaching to the choir here when I say that what we really want to focus on is acknowledging the skills that people bring from their wide variety of life experiences and think about how we transition people from these industries most impacted by displacement of many kinds to these opportunities that can create a sustainable future. So that'll be another trend that you see throughout this presentation. Additionally, we've experienced the impact of trade shifts. The trade war with China has impacted Colorado specifically, as well as the country as a whole, of course. According to the Economic Policy Institute, 2.45% of jobs in Colorado were displaced due to trade shifts, the goods trade deficit with China between 2001 and 2018. And in addition, because of the trade war with China, we've seen also sort of a double impact, if you will. One is that we are losing jobs in manufacturing in certain industries because of the growth of exports from China. And at the same time, China has decreased the number of imports they're bringing in. So we've also lost jobs in those professions that we would traditionally import to export to China that China would import. So we're seeing that those same manufacturing jobs, retail, textiles, were impacted and continue to be impacted by these trade shifts. And these factors, not alone, but definitely contribute to the proliferation of low-wage work. According to the Brookings Institution, we have a proliferation of low-wage work, especially in our metro areas. And what we've seen over the past 10 years is that not only have we seen the number of low-wage work increase, but also the wages have decreased by and large. And again, it's in these same sectors, retail, construction, accommodation, and food services. So I also should have said before I started, I have links to all of these reports that I'm pulling this data from. And I think that's one of the big goals I have for today is to just equip you with a ton of information that you can pull from as it's relevant to you and your work and your planning. And so as they said, the slides will be available for you to do that. For this slide, I just pulled the information from the Denver Aurora Lakewood MSA. You can look at this data by MSAs across the US. And what we see according to the Brookings analysis is that 40% of workers in the Denver Aurora Lakewood MSA are in low wage work. 20%, that's a 20% increase. In terms of the share of jobs in this area that are low wage. Annual earnings are $39,000. And as I mentioned, we follow the same national trend that this is an overall decrease in wages in the last 10 years. So we're seeing sort of this, the combination of all these forces play out and creating some really precarious situations for a large part of our workforce in Colorado. Additionally, we have the growth of the on-demand, gig, self-employed, independent contractor sector. Those words resonate with different people, but I want to be clear that we're talking about the overall growth of the independent contractor market and acknowledges that the technology has created access to independent contracting work that hasn't been seen before. So while we don't have a ton of very clear information about this workforce, it's actually something that my office is tasked with exploring for Colorado. We do know that more people are working in the on-demand economy. According to a Gallup and QuickBooks poll or analysis, 32 million to 44 million U.S. adults engage in self-employed work of some kind. 17% of adults in 2017 engaged in self-employment work. An important distinction there is that most people are doing it sort of ad hoc or as an addition to another job. So only about 1 in 10 people use self-employment as their full-time job. Another interesting factor is the fact that the median income for self-employed workers is about the same when you look at it compared to those who work as employees. The difference, of course, is that as an employee, you are entitled to certain benefits and supports that don't exist if you're an independent contractor. And the majority of those that are working as sole proprietors work in professional services, repair, personal services, administrative services, and retail trade. So a lot of the same industries, especially when we think about retail, that we've seen impacted by these other trends. So those are, you know, four quick slides around market forces and globalization. So I don't pretend to say that that is a comprehensive, but I think it paints a good picture about some of the shifts we've seen, not just in recent years, but over the last 40 years that are impacting the work we do and who is doing that work and what type of life they're able to create for themselves with the opportunities that are available. With that, I'll get to technological transformation. When you say future of work, I think this is the slide, this is the topic that most people associate with future of work. How are technologies advancing and how are they displacing workers and impacting the skills I need to be competitive in the new future of work? And so I do think it's important to distinguish between different types of technological advances. In one area, we have automation, which is the use of technology to reduce the level of human activity needed to complete a particular task. So more of those rote, non-cognitive, routine tasks that automation can displace. When it comes to artificial intelligence, this is where we're seeing computer systems, technology that is able to do tasks and work that normally required human intelligence. So of course, that definition and the examples for artificial intelligence continue to evolve as AI evolves. One example I saw prior to the pandemic was a factory in Germany where they developed an AI system that helped sort boxes, which previously was only possible by humans, which I always think is a fun note that that's something only humans could do and now technology can do. And then when we think about digitalization, I think this is most likely the type of technological transformation that we've all experienced both in our personal and professional lives. I use the example of when I had a flat tire going into the mountains and I had to call a tow truck and the tow truck gave me a lift back into Denver where they were dropping off my car. It was a state fleet vehicle, so I couldn't fix it myself. I do know how to fix the tire. But they brought me back into Denver and the tow truck driver was saying that he gets all his jobs using this app that his company has. So he's a full-time employee, but he just logs. He doesn't go into an office or anything. He's just indicated, it's indicated in his app when he has a job, and it tells him where to go, where to drop it off, and how to do all the paperwork. So an example of digitalization, how we can use technology to improve our day-to-day work. So with that understanding, we can look at some of the trends. And again, I think 1980 is apparently when all of these analyses began. So since the 80s, we've seen the growth in employment for jobs that required non-routine cognitive skill sets. Meanwhile, for those other professions that are either routine cognitive, routine manual, or non-routine manual, those have either stagnated or declined. And you can see the examples of the specific industries in there on the right, but I think it shows the type of the same pressures that we were seeing in terms of globalization are happening as a result of the advances in technology as well. My favorite, if you guys are familiar with The Onion, my favorite Onion article is a picture of an ordering machine at McDonald's that says, "Computer really not looking forward to taking over man's menial tasks." I think that paints a picture of the type of jobs that we see automation most often displacing in the near term. And so that's where we get to this slide, where I really didn't follow the rules of PowerPoint, and I know it's really tiny text, but I think it paints a really important picture that I want to walk you through today. What we see here is an analysis done by Brookings and McKinsey that looks at different industries and the percentage of tasks within jobs in those industries that can be displaced by technology. So when you look at the far left, you have accommodation and food services. And they, based on their analysis, found that 73% of the tasks that individuals in those industries do could be done by technology. So then you have that continued for manufacturing at 59%, transportation at 58%. On the far right, you have the industries with the least percentage of tasks that can be done by technology today. So education, IT, professional services, some healthcare, we see that these industries that really depend on human skills, the growth or the use of critical thinking, collaboration, problem solving, can still be improved by technology. We can still leverage technology to make those 36% of tasks better, but the likelihood of the entire job being displaced due to technology is lower. And so I'm going to sound like a broken record, but we notice that the same industries where globalization impacted it, self-employment has impacted some of these industries. These industries are the ones where there's more likelihood for technology to displace workers. So as we think of interventions, and as you hear Renice talk later, the big thing we need to think about in terms of workforce development, and if I'm an employer considering hiring new talent, is what are the skills that I really need to support my work, and what skills can I train on the job, and how do we connect people from these industries most likely to be displaced? And, you know, spoiler alert, but not really because we're all experiencing it, the industries that have been most impacted by COVID to these opportunities where their skill sets can be built upon and lead to more resilient careers. So again, just to reemphasize, the impact of these technological advances are also felt based on the educational attainment levels. So those with less than a bachelor's degree are more likely to be in a profession that can be displaced due to technology. And we've seen across the board that jobs in general are requiring more and more digital skills and also requiring more advanced digital skills. This is a report from the Markle Foundation and the Rework America Task Force. And what they found is by 2020, so today, that 77% of all jobs require some sort of digital skill set. And what they're showing in this image here is that in the last 10 years, the types of digital skills have become have changed, and more jobs are requiring medium and high digital skills for their workforce. And so I've alluded to this, but wanted to highlight the fact that, you know, the skills of the future, to create a future-ready worker, it's really sort of threefold. And this is just one image from a Burning Glass report, but I think it highlights a really great way of thinking about the future of work. Emphasizing the human skills, those soft skills or essential skills that allow people to work effectively together, the digital skills you need in order to work alongside technology and to leverage technology to improve your work, and then the business enablers, or those practical skills to apply your knowledge, skills, and abilities to the problem at hand and to the project at hand. So this is something that we think about at the Department of Labor and Employment and in partnership with Higher Ed and the Department of Ed to say, how do we ensure that every Coloradan has access to these skills and can build these skills? And then finally, our demographic shifts continue to play a part in the nature of work. So on the right here, you have an image from the census that shows how the population in the U.S. has shifted. Just a quick pause to say, if you haven't filled out your census, please fill it out. It is incredibly important, and you can do so at 2020census.gov. It takes like 10 minutes, and it's incredibly important for funding and all sorts of things. What I want to emphasize here is that, in fact, Colorado is aging very rapidly. We have more and more people over the age of 50 in our workforce, and that will continue to grow. Older workers contribute substantially to our state GDP, and they bring huge amounts of skill sets that to bear in the workforce. The challenge as we continue to grow our digital skills is that though there are populations within every age group that do not have digital skills, the targeted training and employment to make sure that everyone has access to technology and can improve their skill sets is really paramount, especially for our older workers. Want to mention too, though, that in most cases, experienced workers have more of the harder to teach skills than digital literacy. And so how do we leverage these different types of experience to create opportunity for different types of workers? And then Colorado in our younger generations is diversifying really rapidly. And yet our younger populations are more likely to be in those low wage work positions and to have less educational attainment and higher unemployment rates. Due to the trends we've seen in our system and sort of the systemic injustices that have prevented people from advancing and taking advantage of the opportunities or being allowed to take advantage of the opportunities we have in our system. So talking really quickly, and I know that I just want to run through how COVID has impacted them, these four forces at work, and then I'll hand it over to Renice, who has a much more uplifting presentation about solutions and ways you can work with CWDC to make changes. And what we saw is that the COVID pandemic has created this economic disruption that we are all very aware of, unlike anything we've seen since World War II. And as we try to navigate growth, we've seen that the COVID pandemic has essentially accelerated every trend I just described with the future of work. For those jobs that were vulnerable or already disrupted due to globalization, technological advances were the first to be disrupted by COVID. And those individuals were primarily low-wage individuals who were making less than $40,000 a year. So as they try to connect to other opportunities and we go through the various reopenings and closures as the pandemic continues, how can we transition individuals based on their skills into better pathways is, I think, the problem of the time right now. It's also accelerated the automation conversation. Some companies are considering adoption of automation at a higher rate due to public health safety issues. So we could see higher displacement in those professions. We also see the transition to remote work, which is only accessible to some. About 40% of jobs in the U.S., according to one report, cannot be done remotely. So what does that mean for the type of future we're creating for different workers? And then, of course, it's highlighted the digital literacy and access across challenges across Colorado and for different populations. We've seen that, you know, from a globally interconnected world to we've transitioned to one that is not, and we've seen trade decrease. We've seen investment decrease. And so it's accelerating conversations around how do we support small business development? How do we support integrating and shortening supply chains? And how do we make sure that all types of workers have access to the benefits and the supports that they need in order to thrive? And so it's accelerated those conversations that were part of the conversation in the future of work before. And just to end it on one last uplifting note, you know, these demographic challenges that we were seeing in our state have been exacerbated by COVID. So again, the primarily Latino, Hispanic, Black, African-American populations in Colorado held most of the low-wage jobs that were most impacted by COVID. And so as we look to recovery, how are we thinking really strategically about supporting those that have been most impacted to access opportunity in the new world of work? Again, with our older population who have needed to work longer, they're most at risk health-wise for COVID. So in addition to the amount, the age discrimination that they were already facing, there's concern from employers in some cases about the digital skill set ability to work remotely, as well as the health risk and liability of bringing older workers back to work. And so how do we manage those as a state and as employers to make sure we're creating access and opportunity for all? And so with that, my hopefully not too depressing outlook about the future, I really find it to be an opportunity for us all. And that's why I'm so excited to hear about the types of conversation this group has been having around creating more IT and software developers and getting more populations to transition from these industries that have been disrupted to positions in new and growing industries. And that's where Renice will be able to share some of the amazing work that the council is doing in supporting communities and employers and individuals to access those. Because this isn't, you know, new to anyone on this call, but it's a real reckoning for us as a result of COVID, as a result of these future workforces. And we have this opportunity to build resilience for individuals, employers, and communities. So with that, I'll hand it over to Renice to talk about the Workforce Development Council's efforts and how you can get involved. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. Thanks. Sorry, Renice. I'm just going to say thank you for setting that landscape for us so we understand where we are and what's happening so that we can adjust any of the programs we put together. I'll remind our audience that we're going to save the questions until after Renice's presentation, and then we'll go through them. So I appreciate any questions you all might have. Renice, I'll let you take it from here.
Thank you so much, Chris, and thank you all for the opportunity to be here this morning. As Chris mentioned when she introduced me, my name is Renice Walker, and I work for the Colorado Workforce Development Council. We serve as the state workforce board in Colorado in our position within the Department of Labor and Employment. And our role within the state is really bringing together employers with leaders in education, workforce development, economic development, community organizations to come together and collectively think about what is the strategy that Colorado needs to make sure that our employers have the employees and the skill sets that they need to continue driving our economy forward, and what are those opportunities that we need to create for workers in the state to really ensure that they have access to meaningful work. We just adopted new values at the beginning of this year that are very timely considering all that's going on for those this year. Those values include equity, and so our commitment to really focusing on making sure that every Coloradan has access to the opportunities. We heard Catherine point out in many of the trends that she's recognizing that there's a lot of disruption, a lot of inequity happening among several of our populations in the state. And so not only is that a challenge for us collectively as a state, but it's also an opportunity to imagine and reinvent ways to better engage populations that are skilled and can fill some of the jobs that you've acknowledged have gaps. Also recognizing agility, so the need to adapt and be flexible. It's been a challenge forced upon all of us, and the reality is that those who will come out of this more successful, particularly the businesses, are the ones who are willing to think creatively, try some new things to see and recognize new results. And then integration. The challenges that we're facing are unprecedented, and the reality is that there's no one sector among us that can do all of this on their own. It's not a solution that can just be solved by business. It's not a solution that can just be solved by government or economic development, but it really is us working collaboratively, leveraging our resources as best as possible to come up with opportunities for us to collectively move forward together. And so my hope to share with you today, as Catherine mentioned, was just some strategies that we're seeing take place across the state. Many of them were underway before COVID-19 hit, and we are seeing many communities really lean into those strategies and lean into those building blocks to emphasize just what are the paths to move forward. And so a couple of thoughts that I would share with you as we think through what's working or beginning to work in several of our communities is really thinking of this moment, not just as a restart. We're not going back to business as usual. We know that there has been lots of change that was previously happening and previously underway, as Catherine pointed out, but it will continue to happen over time. And so how do we really reset and reconfigure the way that we're all coming together to create opportunity for employees in our state and make sure that we are engaging those employees, particularly those who've been displaced, into the opportunities that you all are so desperately wanting to fill? Catherine also mentioned it several times in her presentation about just the need to focus on skills and boil this down to what are the skills that our employers are needing in this moment, not just what jobs are open, but what skills are needed in those jobs. And really for those displaced workers to really do an inventory on what skills that they have to allow us to better match the needs with the opportunities, or as Chris pointed out when she opened, the supply with the demand. So I will mention briefly some of the tools that are helping communities to identify what connections are happening, and we'll also point to some resources that you all can leverage to really figure out where are the people in the state who may have the skills that may be beneficial to you, particularly for those in-demand jobs in software and engineering. We also know that in this moment, investing in employees is critical. In many ways, particularly for businesses who are experiencing the downturns and the economic challenges, it's not intuitive to really double down on employee investment. But we've seen in previous economic downturns that it is that investment, that engagement of employees, that really does help with ongoing competitiveness. And so we'll talk a little bit about some resources that are available through the state from one of our initiatives that can help some of your businesses to do that, and also other organizations that can be supportive in continuing those employee investments. And then we'll talk specifically about some strategies, upskilling and reskilling strategies, as well as apprenticeships that can be helpful during this time. So I want to start just by mentioning, let's see, my slides are a little bit mixed up, forgive me. Mentioning an initiative that the state is taking on, Catherine, when she pointed out, talked about some of the industries that have been hardest hit by COVID-19. Among the top of those industries are retail and food and accommodations. And so those industries that employ a large number of low-wage workers, but also can serve as a foundational building block for really establishing skills that are needed in a number of industries, particularly those that are really struggling to find talent at this time. And so at the state level, we are helping to champion an initiative called Lives Empowered. It's funded by Walmart, a $4.1 million grant from Walmart that's really invested in upskilling and reskilling frontline workers in retail, food and accommodations, as well as tourism, to really ensure that they are able to move up, not just within those industries, but to ensure that they have the skills to move up into other in-demand industries throughout the state. And so we're carrying that work out through a number of sector partnerships in retail throughout the state who are really coming together across business and a number of their community partners to identify what are local strategies that can help with upskilling that frontline workforce. The reason that I point out this initiative for you all today is because there are a number of skills that are being developed in retail and tourism that can be beneficial to filling jobs in other industries. This graph that I'm showing here is provided by IMSI, who is a national think tank and does a lot of labor market research. And the statistics that you're seeing on the screen are actually drilled down for what's happening in Colorado. And so we do see the top 10 transition. So for people who get their start in retail and customer service jobs, as they continue to upskill, what are the other jobs that they're going into? So at the top of your screen, you see that there's large numbers of transitions into other jobs in the retail and customer service space. So people staying within the industry. But particularly in this time when so many of those folks have been displaced, we're seeing transitions into other industries as well. And so really primed with the skills to transition into sales, into a number of management occupations across industries, marketing and advertising and public relations. We also see transitions, though smaller, but some into jobs within IT support, journalism, writing, and communications. And so really diverse skill set that lays the foundations for a number of other jobs, particularly because of some of that essential skill development. So Catherine pointed out earlier, what are those foundations and basic skills that we need for 21st century jobs? IMSI also provides a tool that we do have access to in the state, and they're providing it free currently because of everything that's happening with COVID-19 to really identify if we have people who are transitioning out of industry. So where you might have high numbers of displaced workers in the Denver South area of the state, what are the skills that they have to transition into other industries, and what are the skills that they might need to really go into those industries? So what you're seeing displayed here is just an output from that skill match system. And you're seeing that for workers who are transitioning out of retail, and in this moment, many of them, because they've been laid off, what are the shared competencies that they've developed that can be helpful in a number of other industries? And on the right side of the screen, if we were to go in and in this tool select transitions into marketing and advertising, we'll see an output of some skills that might be developed. And for our businesses on the line today, why is that important to you? When we think about ways that you might invest, ways that you might help with these transitions in the economy, just thinking about what are the skills that you are really primed to develop within your company, what are you good at training people to do, and then where might you partner with local workforce providers, local community college, Arapahoe Community College, or others to help employees who have been displaced develop the skills that are needed to make those transitions. And so I do not have an analysis available today for transitions into software, but that's certainly something that we can look into more deeply as a result of this conversation. I also just want to point out and stress the support for employee assistance. And so under the Lives Empowered Initiative, we are partnering with an organization that's headquartered here in Colorado called Work-Life Partnership. They provide resource navigation. And so we know that a number of employees right now are struggling just with basic needs in daily life. For those who are going back into work and showing up every day in the office, continuing to struggle with things like childcare, there are also workers who are struggling to find affordable housing or just managing daily stress of life. And so Work-Life will work with an employer whose employees are experiencing significant challenges, either in this season or otherwise, and really connect through that employer with the employees to make sure that they are able to access resources. Work-Life Partnership also has funding available, particularly for frontline workers, so workers in retail, tourism, food and accommodations, to really provide assistance. So if a car breaks down and a person can't get to work, or if an employee is able to work remotely but they don't have the technology that's needed to do so, Work-Life can come in, pitch in some supportive services funds, and really help that employee. So rather than the employer really taking on those challenges to support their employees, can partner with Work-Life Partnership to make that happen. I will say that Work-Life services are available to any business in any industry within the state. They do have a fee-for-service model, but for employers, particularly in the industries that I mentioned that are being served by Lives Empowered, so retail, tourism, food and accommodations, there is some assistance that is provided for those employers, and also free services provided for small businesses who are employing less than 500 employees. And so at the end of this deck, I have some information. So if you're an employer who might benefit from these services and you want to have a deeper conversation about what that might look like, I do provide that information so that you're able to connect either as an employer with Work-Life Partnership or share that information with your employees to connect directly. Another strategy that we're seeing working is around upskilling and reskilling. So we know that there are employees throughout the state who've been displaced. Chris pointed it out. They are looking for jobs, but we've got to figure out the mechanism to really help them connect with those jobs. And in some cases, there might just be some additional skills that they need to develop in order to be most competitive for the jobs that are open. And so before we dive into really the different ways that we can approach upskilling and reskilling, just want to provide some definitions so we all understand what we're talking about. So when I say upskilling, that's really focused on continuous learning and development. That's not only important for workers who are displaced, but as Catherine mentioned, as the economy continues to evolve, as there are more and more changes and skills needed in kind of the digital environment, the need for continuous learning and development is really true for the majority of occupations throughout the state. And the way that upskilling is achieved is through companies choosing to invest in training programs that help employees to develop these new abilities and minimize the skill gaps. And so as employers, if you're doing a scan of the skills that are needed, now that your company is changing or that you're adapting to some of the trends that Catherine pointed out with the future of work, upskilling models can often be of assistance to you. Reskilling is really the process of learning to develop new skills so that you can do a different job. So if I started out as a cashier, really developing the skills to transition into a marketing professional or another opportunity. And so the ways that upskilling and reskilling is done, or the ways that we have really evidence on both within the state and nationally, are through models like apprenticeship models, and we'll talk a bit in more details with that, and other forms of work-based learning, so including internships, which most folks are familiar with in the state, or externships, which are taking professionals and getting them more exposure into new careers and new industries. Also certifications and credentials. So many of us are familiar with associate's degrees or bachelor's degrees, but where there is growing recognition of the need is around industry recognized credentials. So those credentials that are really specific to certain jobs and occupations, and that really do prove for the individual that they're ready, equipped with the skills that an employer is needing to hire them for. And so at the state level, we're both working on helping to close the gap in attainment around those different types of certifications and credentials, and recognize not just the traditional credentials, BA and an AA, but also those other micro credentials and different types of credentials that really can provide solid currency to get employees jobs in this environment. And then just other forms of basic skill training. So for employees who are needing additional support with English language acquisition, or just some literacy and numeracy or basic digital learning skills, different approaches to developing those, oftentimes in partnership with others in the community. So I mentioned that one way to really do upskilling is through apprenticeships. Many of us are familiar with apprenticeships because they've been around for ages, but we know them to be in trades like for electricians or plumbers, And now there's a lot of investment at the state level to really grow the number of apprenticeships in other white collar jobs. And so particularly going to talk about some work happening to grow apprenticeships in IT, as well as healthcare. And we will discuss those in just a moment. Again, when we talk about apprenticeships, what are those? What is the definition of them? So apprenticeships are really an employer-driven earn and learn model. So it allows a person to continue building their skills without having to stop earning money in order to develop those skills. So it combines both learning on the job and in a work environment with paid instruction or related classroom instruction to continue developing their skills. And what you see on the screen here is kind of five core components of a registered apprenticeship. There are different types of apprenticeships. Registered apprenticeships are registered at the federal level and have a national credential where the apprentice can really take that and go to a number of other jobs throughout the country because of that credential. And then there are rewards for skill gains. And so we really do see a change in the pay structure, also a pay in the credentials and certifications an apprentice earns as they continue to move up and develop new skills. So I mentioned that there is some statewide investment in building apprenticeships in healthcare. That's being led by the Colorado Community College System in partnership with local community colleges throughout the state. And so Arapahoe Community College is heavily involved in this work. And this is really to grow the number of healthcare apprenticeships in the state. And so as you can see, the goal is to get 5,000 new adult apprentices into healthcare. It is funded by a $12 million grant from the U.S. Department of Labor, as well as in-kind support from a number of different major healthcare providers within the state of Colorado. And there is funding available through the community college system to really support with program development, in some cases, the staffing that's needed to develop an apprenticeship and to run an apprenticeship, as well as support for small and mid-size supportive services. So for apprentices who need, again, assistance with childcare or other wraparound services, transportation, there are some grants available from the community college system to assist with that, as well as small business wage reimbursement. So apprenticeships, as we talked about before, are an earn and learn model, but the challenge can be, especially in this environment where businesses are struggling with funding, having the money available to pay those wages. So there is a small amount of assistance that can be available for that. CoTech is a similar effort, but it's focused on IT. And so as you can see on the screen, the goal is really to increase 1,600 adult apprenticeships, apprentices in the IT professions. And so a focus on a number of different occupations in IT, as well as cybersecurity. And this effort is really being funded by a $2 million grant from the U.S. Department of Labor and being carried forward in collaboration with the community college system, the Colorado Department of Higher Education, 13 community colleges throughout the state, the Workforce Development Council, and a number of others. And so if you do have an interest in really exploring apprenticeship opportunities, either hiring apprentices or potentially setting up an apprenticeship within your company, the information on the side here is provided for CoTech at cccs.edu, and feel free to reach out to them or feel free to reach out to me, and happy to get you connected and kind of navigate what is the best next step for you. So we talked about a couple of different strategies with upskilling and reskilling, and also the Lives Empowered Initiative and how it's working to upskill workers and get them plugged into in-demand careers. And in reality, as business professionals, you're busy. You have a lot going on, especially now as you're thinking about how to really make sure that you stay competitive and carry forward your business in this environment. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about folks within your community, at different institutions that can be of an assistance to support you. And some of them are engaged in the Denver South Partnership already. And so sector partnerships are a big part of that. We'll talk more in a moment about what those are and how they might help. Your local workforce center is just a bastion of resources that can help both for businesses and also employees who are really struggling during this time. And they have a number of different resources to help with employers in really matching some of those skill needs with the demands. the folks who are on unemployment insurance are also required to be doing job search and creating account in Connecting Colorado, which is used by the state public workforce system. And so there's some information and data that the workforce is able to provide to really do some of that matching that we talked about earlier to connect the supply with the demand in your local community. Community colleges, in terms of developing skills and also supporting the needs of businesses, are a huge player and can be of great support, as well as a number of community organizations who are helping to really do some innovative strategies to help connect the supply and demand during this time. I also just wanted to share some resources that are available through our office, the Colorado Workforce Development Council. We talked at a really high level about some of the strategies that are working in the state today, but we also are producing a resource called the Talent Development Playbook that is going into more detail about these strategies and really laying out the business case for what are the business challenges that these strategies can help solve. What are some really basic, simple, tangible steps you can take as a business to get this strategy off the ground within your company? And then what are some examples of who are employers in the state who are putting the strategy into play? And so the Talent Development Playbook is available on the Workforce Development Council's website. You can Google it. And we are releasing new strategies each month, as well as hosting a monthly webinar the fourth Thursday of the month to talk in more detail about the strategies. And it will be a conversation with employers who are using them to talk about how they got the strategy started. And then I'll close just by sharing more about sector partnerships. Collaboration really is key in this time. I love the work that is being driven forward by the Denver South Partnership, and you are already engaged with some of the sector partnerships within the Denver metro area. But these are shared tables where business is really coming together and collaborating with others in their community, including community colleges, K-12, community-based organizations, economic developers, to really share ideas and create strategies to strengthen the sector and make sure the industry is moving forward in a competitive fashion, but also create good jobs and good opportunities and better ways to connect individuals within the community with those available jobs, as well as many other things. And so we're seeing some really cool approaches being taken by sector partnerships to really think innovatively in this time and do some of that skill matching for employers, as well as really preparing future workforce to take on the jobs that are needing to be filled. I thought I had a slide with the sector partnerships. There are 30 active sector partnerships within the state. About 9 of them are actually within the Denver metro area. And so a new partnership in transportation just launched. I wanted to point that one out because I noticed on the slide that Chris shared, transportation is particularly a challenge in your area, and they are working on filling those jobs. And so happy to share more information about what they are accomplishing or how to connect with them if you would find that useful. I also just want to point out a couple of conversations that are coming up that are being hosted by the Workforce Development Council. We are hosting webinars on Thursdays called Talent Development Thursdays. That includes conversations about the strategies that are being profiled in the Talent Development Playbook. So the next one is coming up on August 27th at 2:00, and we're focusing in on recruiting and retention strategies. We also are hosting a conversation with John Schallert, who is a business reinvention expert in the state. He's located in Longmont and works internationally, and he's coming together to talk with businesses about kind of reinventing themselves, how they best position themselves to really be addressing all of the challenges that are being faced in this moment. And that conversation is taking place on September 17th from 2 to 3. All those conversations are recorded, so if the timing does not work for you, know that you're able to access and view the recording on the Workforce Development Council's website. And so I will share these slides with Chris, and so you'll find active links to the resources that we talked about earlier. I did just want to point out one resource that we did not discuss, which is Onward Colorado, which is a one-stop shop for those who are facing challenges because of COVID. And so it helps them to connect to life supports, but also can help connect with opportunities for retraining and connecting with work. And as employers, you're able, if you have open positions, to post that on Onward Colorado as well. And so that is kind of my presentation for the day. Welcome any questions. If you want to learn more about the work of the Workforce Development Council or any of the resources that I've shared, you can go to our website and click Get Involved, and that will allow you to get connected to our monthly newsletter, which will keep you up to date with all of the work that we're doing at the state level.
Thank you so much, Renice. That was really good. It was a lot of great places for us to go and things to think about as we're developing programs in Denver South. And I love what you said at the beginning, which was we need to reset and not restart. So that also, I think, sets a goal for us as far as bringing more individuals into the workforce in Denver South. We are getting close to the end of time, but we have some questions, and I think this is a good conversation for us to have. So I'm going to invite Becky Nelson to join the discussion. She is going to be looking at a few of the questions that we received for the Q&A session, and we'll take a few of them and then we'll wrap up.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Catherine and Renice. That was really great information this morning, both on the landscape of work that we're looking at and some tools and resources for all of us as we look forward to kind of that reset, like you mentioned. The first question is for Catherine. This comes from Kathy Turley. She's a council member with the City of Centennial. With the significant importance of technology and technological advances, do you anticipate a stronger presence and opportunity for vocational education? And then to kind of expand on that, does there continue to be interest in those professions from our youth specifically?
That's a great question, and I think something that we talk a lot about, because I know as we have seen the expansion of apprenticeships and we've seen in-demand occupations grow, there has been consistent concerns about how do we get more people interested in the trades as these important professions that have sort of powered our economy for years and years. So I don't know if I can speak to the general consensus for young people, but I think that TART working with our K-12 partners, working with our CTE partners, to think about how we promote the trades and the development of digital skills alongside the training for those trades is really important and top of mind. I would say too that as we're working in rural communities around economic development, that the digital skills and displacement due to technology is sort of interesting in these contexts that you wouldn't necessarily associate with technological transformation. So, you know, agriculture being one of the most high-tech fields right now, and as we think of technology improving the quality of the experience for workers in different trades, there's some real opportunities there. So I guess to answer the question, we are always trying to spread the word about how great these the trades are and how those professions have created really great jobs for so many people and careers for so many people, and they're part of the puzzle of this workforce development picture.
Great. Thank you so much, Catherine. Our second question is specific to Renice, and this comes from staff here at Denver South. What advice would you give Denver South and the partner organizations that we're working with? And that can be anything from the local workforce center to our local governments to our local educators. What advice can you give us to encourage some of those equitable workforce strategies? And then this is kind of a two-part question. One, how do we encourage those equitable workforce strategies? And then how do we advance the reskilling of available workforce, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic?
Really great question. I think when we are talking about equitable recovery, it starts with really getting a grasp on what's happening now. Who is benefiting, who's well plugged in, and who are the people who are being left out and don't have access? And when it comes to equity, I would say don't feel limited in just thinking about what's going on in your specific local community. We have good resources at the state level through the Talent Pipeline Report that can provide you with where are there people who have not been well engaged and are kind of being left out, but that might serve as good resources to help staff and fill some of your open positions through, you know, location neutral employment or otherwise. And so we're happy to help with that. But I think really getting a grasp on what are the specific challenges you're experiencing now. And then also making a clear plan. So what are the strategies that you want to prioritize tackling and where you really do have the resources to do so now so that you can move towards action right away? I think sometimes, especially in collaborations, we get bogged down with planning and talking about what we can do, which limits action. And so really focus on where can you start while still holding a long-term vision with what you can do as you continue, but start with that low-hanging fruit. What can you put into action right away?
That's great. That's great advice. Thanks, Renice. And then, Chris, I'm going to wait for a cue from you to cut me off. This is one last question, and we can go more if we need to, but I'm going to direct this to Catherine. Catherine, do you think that shifts in the market force, in the market forces will encourage, especially in this time of the pandemic, do you think that some of those market forces will encourage more entrepreneurship or startup activity in Colorado and especially Denver South?
Yeah, absolutely. When we look at trends from the last recession, we saw huge innovations in entrepreneurship and startups come out of those. And so I think that's where a lot of the conversation is, recognizing that so many small businesses and entrepreneurs have felt a huge brunt of the impact of COVID. How do we support those businesses, but also keep that energy going with Colorado and Denver's entrepreneurial spirit and support those innovations? In particular, for our rural communities, entrepreneurship and small business development is such a key part of economic development strategies and will continue to be so. So I expect many more innovations, many more conversations around how we support entrepreneurs, and I think we'll see some fascinating innovations that come out of this experience.
Great. A little good news to finish us off. I think that's really, really great. Thank you, Catherine and Renice. Those are great information for us at Denver South and the partners we work with. And I'm going to pass it back to Chris Shepherd to kind of close us out. Thank you.
Thanks, Becky. Catherine and Renice, you provided a whole lot of good stuff for us to start thinking about. We will encourage people to work with you or, you know, send companies your way whenever anyone has any questions. So for our audience, thank you for joining Denver South. This is our every other month partnership meeting. The next one's scheduled for October 1st. So I'm going to wrap it up by saying we appreciate your support of Denver South and hope everyone stays healthy and productive.